Welcome to Fourth Stream Radio, where we consider concepts to help on your quest to a satisfied mind. Today, Dave and I are talking about Noah, the man of God, and his incredible connection with God's story.
Well, one of the things that I love about the God story is that it's transgenerational and spans centuries and cultures with what I like to call timeless relevance, because, you know, Noah is every bit as relevant today as he was when he spoke thousands of years ago.
It doesn't feel like it, but that's part of our goal today. Is to help us see how it is.
Well, if you'd like to read about the full story about Noah, you'll find it in Genesis 6 through 9. Genesis has, in that first 11 chapters, some truly foundational things mm-hmm. for us to understand about the human race. You know, the chosen race wasn't selected until Abraham came on the scene. Well, there's a lot of time that passes in Genesis 1 through 11.
Right.
So if you want to check that out, go to Genesis 6 through 9 to get the whole story of Noah as we refer to it somewhat today.
Well, and it's interesting too, and we'll talk about that more today, just all the things about Noah. If you really take the time to dissect the story and imagine what it was really like.
Well, he's kind of the first example in the scriptures, not so much, you know, God had his men, you know, up through the time of Noah, but there weren't a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
But being a man of God, and Noah was a man of God, that's an interesting concept that kind of unfolds in the scriptures. So men and women of God who are, you know, have a heart after God's heart are very unique in the story. And that doesn't mean they have perfect stories of perfect devotion. It just means that God captures their heart and they become men and women of God. And that's hopeful for me.
It is hopeful. Even as you say that about Noah, he has ups and downs in his life, which are really encouraging.
In the book of Matthew, Jesus talks about Noah, and he obviously was a man of faith. In fact, Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. That's just one of my favorite verses, because that's how I feel in my own life. I feel like I have found favor in the eyes of the Lord, and that concept is laid out as we look at the character of Noah. And that's a pretty neat thing, because here he is in the midst of antiquated history, and God picks him, chooses mm-hmm. him from, we don't know how many people there were, you know, before the flood. There may have been a billion people. We don't even know.
But what we do know is that he had a good heart. He was a man of God. And the rest of what was around him, they thought evil. They imagined evil. They were violent. They'd become like a sewer is sort of, you know, the feeling you get. Yes. And they were corrupt to the core. And so you think, he lived around that. How did he not? I get swept up by my culture. How did he separate himself? Still loving those people, I assume. But how did he separate himself to be a man of God in the midst of that kind of culture?
Well, there are so many aspects to the story of Noah, and there's no way we can do it justice in just 15 mm-hmm. minutes, other than to talk about the fact that he's a man of God. And if you want to read more about his story, go to Genesis 6 through 9. But there are a few mentions of Noah mm-hmm. in the rest of the scriptures, not the least of which is when the Son of God himself talks about Noah. And I want to read that out of Matthew 24.
Uh-huh.
But of that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven. Now, he's talking about the time when the Son returns and the beginning of the end of time as we know it happens.
Mm-hmm.
Of that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven nor the Son, but only the Father knows. For the coming of the Son of Man will be just like the days of Noah. For in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying, giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark, and they did not understand until the flood came and took them all away. So will be the coming of the Son of Man.
You know, I hear that, and I have two feelings at the same time. There's sort of a tension, it feels like, to me in that. On one hand, there's great relief, like, oh, I can shed this humanness, it's over, and be in heaven. And the second one is kind of a dread for the non-understanding, that the sadness that you feel for those who just perished in the flood. And then you think about Noah getting into the ark, and what was that like? You know, did he have aunts and uncles still alive? Did he have siblings?
Certainly he must have had family.
Only his wife and children and in-laws went in. So what did that mean when he realized how stormy it was, and imagining what's really happening underneath
Well, and all the preparation. I mean, how long did he build the ark? It was like 100 years?
Yes, probably.
100 years plus. And so that was a long period of time. And had it rained before then?
Well, it doesn't seem like it's rained because this seems like the first rain. That's right. What he talks about, because nobody really knows. But there had to have been rivers. So you wonder, were there boats, and did they have sailboats at that point? Because, you know, a sailboat was probably built differently than this kind of boat.
Yes, this was like a cork boat.
Well, and had to weather the storm, but it didn't really have sails, so it didn't need to be built for the same kind of torque, at least the stuff I've read. So just interesting.
Well, and you try to imagine what it would have been like, whether there were 100,000 people, whether there were a million people, whether there were multiple millions of people at the time. But apparently, nobody was worth putting into the boat apart from Noah and his family. And that, what does that tell you about how where things had gone just in a brief period of time in human history?
Well, and honestly, we don't really know about his family. They're on the boat with him. But they don't really say anything.
That's
the Bible,
his immediate family.
You don't really know if it's just Noah or if somehow his family's included in that. But yes, by then he'd built it. God had filled it. That's what was interesting as I reread it. Just that in 7 days, God brings all the animals. So just how did they find the ark? You know what I mean? It had to be
GPS.
The Spirit.
It had to be GPS.
And there was, you know, we always talk about the animals coming two by two. And yes, they did come two by two, but the unclean animals, there was only one pair. But the clean animals, there were seven pairs.
And that's interesting in and of itself.
Well, okay, so that's interesting. But the other thing is, why did he even preserve the unclean?
Let them go.
Because we need bacon.
So you're thinking, you're imagining these little piggies getting onto the boat. Well, you know, I just the whole picture that's painted there. And it makes you wonder what it would have felt like to come off from the ark, because however that happened, I've read things about, you know, the whole atmosphere being different and just kind of imploding, that the water came out of the earth and came down out of the heavens.
It doesn't sound like it was just rain. It sounds like God opened the storehouses everywhere.
Yeah. So what would that have been like to move from, you know, as close to paradise as you could have been at the time of Noah, till absolutely not paradise, and then to have all of your neighbors be gone. I mean,
everything's gone.
How empty, you know, how difficult that must have been for Noah and his family, and for them beginning again. I mean,
right. And you know, one thing I missed, when they got on the boat or got on the ark, God closed the door. Can you imagine how many times you would have checked that door if you'd been the one closing it?
But let's get some caulk on that.
Somehow when God closes it, there's just a security.
So the coming of the Son of Man is going to be like that. And it's not so much the suddenness of the coming, but it's the unawareness of people. And certainly it must have been an awful, awful shock. And I think that that's what Jesus is saying. It's going to be the same way. People are going to be going on with their lives, you know, oblivious to the fact that the word of God has been spoken, that it's going to happen. That leads me to this verse in Hebrews 11. By faith, Noah, being warned by God about things not yet seen. So they're doing this by faith and not by sight. Mm-hmm. In reverence, in respect of God, prepared an ark for the deliverance or the salvation of his household, by which he condemned the world. Because obviously the ark wasn't big enough to hold the entire world.
Right.
And he became an heir of the righteousness, which is according to faith. And, you know, that's a lot of what makes a man or woman of God. It's not like you spend your whole life building an ark, or you do something that's really famous in the Bible or in history or whatever. It's your faith. And because faith is a gift from God, that is what shines when you look at the examples in history like Noah.
I love, too, that on one side you have sort of the condemning of the world, and then in Ezekiel he says, Ezekiel 33:11, he says, he takes no pleasure in the death of the wicked. So just that you know, that tension there of how hard that is for me and my humanness to sort of understand that. And then one other thing about that verse, in reverence, he prepared an ark for the salvation of his household. Is there some part of this that, I mean, people say you can see Jesus everywhere in the Old Testament. Is there somewhere in this ark story that you see Jesus?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, it was the connection that was made. But yeah, I mean, the rainbow in and of itself and the whole ark story, mm-hmm. that's in the throne of God. And that's where God.
And Jesus.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Obviously, he's at the right hand of God. Uh-huh. So yeah, I think there are a lot of different things. I hadn't thought about that. You asked me that question right now. I bet you I could come up with 10 things.
You probably could. How about the only door? There's only one door in that boat.
You had your answer. And so you baited me. Well, yeah, that is good.
No, actually, I wasn't baiting you. I thought you would just say it and I'd be, okay, that's good.
Yeah. Well, people are getting to know us listening to our program. You know, a lot of people think that, I'm the bad one, but, you know, you really mm-hmm. are the one that's...
I don't know.
Second Peter 2 is another passage that talks about Noah. For if God did not spare angels when they sinned, but cast them into hell and committed them to pits of darkness reserved for judgment. Now, that's an interesting concept. Mm-hmm. And he did not spare the ancient world, but he preserved Noah. I love that word, preserve Noah, a proclaimer of righteousness along with seven others when he brought the flood upon the world of the ungodly. And if he condemned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah to destruction by reducing them to ashes, having made them an example to those who would live ungodly lives thereafter, and if he rescued righteous Lot oppressed by the sensual conduct of unprincipled men, then the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from temptation.
That just about makes me weep. Just the idea that, number one, I was struck by Lot. You got to be kidding. He was a jerk.
Yes.
And he calls him righteous. And then even as I was thinking about that, when I was looking at this week, thinking, so am I. So he's, in some ways, he's talking about me right there.
It's the Pharisee factor.
Yeah. And then the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from temptation. He is willing and he knows how when I call out to him to rescue me.
And, you know, the picture, I don't know if you've ever seen an incredible rainbow. I remember the time we were with a family and we were at the Royal Gorge.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a round rainbow because mm-hmm. of the depth of the gorge. And mm-hmm. it was like... You just looked at it and you went,
I don't think I've
ever seen anything like that in my mm-hmm. life. And, you know, the promise that is held in that is not only that God will no longer never again destroy the earth, with a flood like that, but it's also a promise that in that throne, there's the promise of eternal life. So just like he destroyed the earth, he is going to give us everlasting life. And that's a pretty cool promise.
It's awesome. I love, when I see a rainbow, I am never unaware of what it means.
Yeah.
Somehow God always prompts me to remember. It's always cool. And you go, oh, look at the rainbow. But somewhere I'm always reminded of what it really means.
Yeah,
that he's just always,
part of you.
Yeah, he's just always showing a little bit of himself every day.
If you are interested and taken with the idea of being and becoming a man or a woman of God, or maybe you're just even wondering if, if that's a legitimate goal mm-hmm. in life, I've got something for you that we'll probably talk about a little bit this week, put it together a couple of years ago. It's called Man of God Nexus, manofgodnexus.com.
N-E-X-U-S?
Yes, and it has some resources in it, free resources if you or someone you know is pursuing a life as a man after God's own heart or woman after God's own heart. That's manofgodnexus.com. Hey, forstream.com is a collection of resources to help you and those you know experience the freedom of a kingdom life. If you'd like to listen to today's program in its entirety, go to forstream.com and click on the radio button. Don't forget, manofgodnexus.com is also another free resource that we would love to make available to you.
Together, we are finding hope at forthstream.com.